evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, August 25th, 2014. The former U.S. ambassador to South Sudan says the country has a long way to go before achieving stability.
We had the challenges of corruption, fiscal responsibility, service delivery, developing of infrastructure, paved roads. There didn't exist very many paved roads. South Sudan government doesn't even have a government internet network.
And internally displaced people in South Sudan say they have suffered enough. It's time for peace. We'll have these stories and more coming up. For thousands of displaced South Sudanese, the long wait for permanent peace agreement between the government and the rebels has meant struggling to stay alive without enough food, shelter, or clean drinking water. The 8-month-long conflict has left at least 10,000 people dead and forced 1.8 million people away from their homes, many of whom live in IDP camps, as we hear from Philip Aleu in Juba.
Young schoolgirls in groups of 4 and 5 dance and sing songs of celebration after receiving bags of flour at a primary school inside the Konyokonyo IDP compound in Juba. Kaku Atruk, a father of 18 children and the head of 6 families, took refuge here along with his family members in December when his home in the Juba suburb of Jebel, about 3 kilometers away, was destroyed. Atruk says he could not attend to his house because it is not safe.
How can we return to our homes when the sounds of guns are heard every day? This place is safe. The school is safe, and this is why we are staying here.
Atruk is one of more than 4,300 people sheltering here. He says there is not enough food or clean drinking water to go around. His Sikh families use plastic tents provided by international humanitarian agencies to take cover from the heavy rains. And when it rains, which is often, pit latrines overflow, raising health concerns about the spread of the disease. Atruk says they live on handouts from faith-based groups and other well-wishers. Deng Majungchul, a former executive director of the U.S.-based Lost Boys and Girls of Sudan and a recent graduate from Harvard University, says thanks to donations from his friends in the United States, he is able to deliver 80 bags of flour on Saturday to the IDPs here and elsewhere in Juba. Majuk says there is much more work that must be done by South Sudanese.
We'll continue to pressurize the government of South Sudan, the rebel group, the former detainees, the civil society, and the faith-based group, so that we as South Sudanese own our problem and provide our solution. Our message is one, that South Sudanese are one people and they are not enemy.
Majuk says the government must also make IDPs believe it is safe to return to their homes by providing adequate security in the towns it controls. James Alich, a researcher with the Juba-based think tank, the Ebony Group, agrees.
South Sudan, no matter what happened, we must reflect and recognize that we cannot build our way or we cannot make our way to prosperity through killing one another. We can only do that if we sit down as brothers and sisters and talk. We can only build this nation through talking as brothers.
Ali says by understanding the suffering of IDPs and other South Sudanese forced to cross the border to neighboring countries, the delegates to the peace talks in Addis Ababa must make concessions and save lives. At least 100,000 South Sudanese are sheltering in UN peacekeeping bases across the country. International humanitarian agencies have warned of a looming famine later this year if conditions do not change quickly. IDPs here say they cannot return to their homes without knowing there is a permanent ceasefire signed by the government and the rebels. Atruk says for several days he was living under a tree in Jebel after fighting broke out near his home in Pibor, Jonglei State last year. He says those who once owned buildings in Juba no longer have homes.
Our family items are looted. If you return home, there is nothing. Some people are unemployed, and since the refugees agencies are giving us more food ratio, it is better to eat from here. Children get food here. We get free water from the Nile.
And there are many others just like Atruk in Juba. The UN runs two bases hosting more than 30,000 displaced South Sudanese in Juba House and Thongpeng. The IDPs do not have much, but when they receive food, they are thankful. And these children who sing about having hope in times of difficulty. For BOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Juba.
And now we go to the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. The Intergovernmental Authority for Development, or IGAD, says one of its ceasefire monitors has died in Bentiu after being detained by opposition forces. IGAD, which is sponsoring the South Sudan peace talks, did not name the man who died, but says he was part of a verification team that arrived in Unity State on Saturday on a routine inspection mission. IGAD says the monitors were arrested and marched to an unknown destination by opposition fighters shortly after arriving. The man died of natural causes, IGAD says. The UN mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, says the man who died was a liaison officer for the SPLA. UNMISS says he was part of a team of six ceasefire monitors and three air crew and confirms that he died of natural causes. The UN says other IGAD monitors and the air crew were rescued and flown to the UNMISS base in Bentiu. Seyoub Mesfin, the chairman of the IGAD South Sudan mediation team, said during a briefing at an extraordinary summit on South Sudan in Addis Ababa that those responsible for the ceasefire monitors' death will, quote, bear the consequences. Also at the summit, Seyoum called on the South Sudanese delegation to, quote, end the blame game, unquote, and take real steps towards peace. Seyoum made the statement after South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makui, who is the spokesperson for the government at the talks, accused IGAD of siding with the opposition. Responding to the accusation by Makui, a frustrated Seyoum called on the two parties to stop shifting blames for who is responsible for the 8 months crisis in South Sudan.
The warring parties, the belligerent parties, must know this is a war created by them. This is their war, nobody's war. They are the responsible people for this war. And they are also the primary party to resolve this war, this crisis. A blame game between them must come to an end. A blame game on the mediation must end. It must end.
Seyoum was speaking after Makui accused IGAD of taking sides with the opposition. Makui also said IGAD mediators are doing more than their mandate states.
And peace cannot come to South Sudan while the mediators have become the negotiators. We request that the mediators abide by and respect their position as mediators, not negotiators.
Seyoum admits that his team's mediation style is not popular, but says a tough hand is necessary if peace is to return to South Sudan.
They don't like this mediation because it's so direct. The mediation is telling them, these are not middlemen arranging wedding ceremony between couples. This is deciding the fate of a nation and a people. They don't like us being blunt with them. We will not waste time by treating with kid gloves. We have to say it, the fact.
The government of South Sudan is boycotting the last round of talks. It says it wants to hold direct talks with the opposition, but the IGAD mediation insists the face of the talk should bring together all stakeholders, including civil society groups, political parties, and faith-based groups and the warring sides. In a statement released after the IGAD head of state meeting on South Sudan, IGAD deplored the repeated violation by both sides of the January ceasefire agreement and the failure of the government and the opposition delegation in Addis to set up a transitional government by August 10th deadline that they all agreed to. IGAD warns in a statement that because of the fighting, South Sudan is slipping closer to famine that will devastate the country and the entire region. Iskander Free wrote and prepared this report for VOA from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. A leading South Sudanese think tank, the SOUD Institute, is calling for changes to the slow-moving peace process in Addis Ababa. SOUD says in a report that the international community needs to add its voice to the peace process, and South Sudanese need to find a way to effectively pressure the warring parties to finally make a peace. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
The report released this month says the government and opposition are still recruiting South Sudanese to fight in their ranks because they believe they can win the 8-month-old conflict on the battlefield. SOUD researcher Nyal Tit Mamir says that belief, which is held by both sides, is wrong and is fanning the flames of violence in South Sudan.
So long as the parties continue to recruit these better citizens, train and equip armies, they would not heed the citizens' cries for peace. And so long as the divisive ethnic politics remains in place, politicians would continue to recruit for war on ethnic basis and further dividing the people.
The report says South Sudanese need to set aside their differences, especially ethnic ones, and speak with one voice to challenge the warring parties to stop recruiting new fighters. Citizens need to insist that they want the government and opposition to make peace through dialogue, the report says. SOUD is also calling on international players, including the United States and China, to step up their involvement in the peace process. This would give the chief mediator at the peace talks, the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, more clout, the report says. IGAD has been trying to broker an end to the fighting since January, but has little to show for its efforts.
Getting the United Nations Security Council, the African Union, the European Union, IGAD, the Troika, and several individuals' countries to be on the same page, indeed a difficult scenario to imagine, would create enough muscle to bring pressure to bear on the parties.
The current round of IGAD-led talks in Addis Ababa is at a standstill. Government negotiators are boycotting the talks, saying IGAD is biased toward the opposition side. The report says the early stages of the IGAD-led talks should be confined to the two warring parties. Instead, there are several civil society, faith-based and political groups taking part in the talks, which are making very slow progress.
To try to involve all the seven groups as presented, the mediation was a challenge of how to get the men with guns to agree to anything. The rest of the groups are demanding without the two main parties, fearing loss of power. It would seem more logical to sequence the process by bringing the warring parties together to first agree to a settlement that commits them to the processes that can only be implemented together with other groups.
Tit Mamir says once the warring sides have held initial talks and agreed to end the fighting, other parties could be brought into the negotiating process. When that happens, national reconciliation, repair of ethnic relations, constitutional progresses, the return of early 1.5 million displaced persons to their homes, and the creation of a special redevelopment fund for war-affected areas should be high on the agenda. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The former U.S. ambassador to South Sudan says the future of the country depends on the decision of the leaders to put aside their differences and work for peace. Susan Page says the people of South Sudan have endured very difficult times in the history of the country and should now enjoy the benefits of peace. She also acknowledges the country faces several challenges and it's going to take a long time for South Sudan to enjoy stability.
The peace agreement doesn't mean that the work is over. In fact, the work is really just beginning to build a nation, to develop an infrastructure, an economy, solid and stable institutions, and that it's not possible to do everything overnight. Even the U.S., you know, for the first 100 years of our independence, we excluded all kinds of people from being able to vote. You had to be a landowner. You had to be white. African Americans were not considered even human, let alone being able to vote. Women could not vote. So, you know, it's taken us a long time as well, and that we shouldn't expect everything to be smooth sailing at the very beginning.
What are some of the challenges that you had to deal with as the U.S. ambassador to South Sudan, because you came at a time when everybody was dancing and happy. But there were challenges that came right after that.
Some of the challenges were things like, how do you develop a professional army? We had the challenges of corruption, fiscal responsibility, service delivery, developing of infrastructure, paved roads. There didn't exist very many paved roads. South Sudan government doesn't even have a government internet network. So there's nothing like .RSS or something like that. People end up using their personal accounts. And, you know, so all of the security that needs to be included. Land is a challenge, and land rights is a challenge.
And surely in the midst of all these challenges, there must have been some times where you were sitting and relaxing and smiling. Could you share with us some of your happy moments in South Sudan?
You know, this is a place that is vibrant with colors and, you know, times when I've gone to Yambio or northern Barlagazal, where I've eaten beautiful, fresh, ripe mangoes, where I've seen the markets running, where I've seen the migration occurring peacefully, whether it's people coming across down into South Sudan from Sudan, be they the Misuria, the Rizagat, and getting along with the Malwal Dinka, getting along with the Nok Dinka from Abyei.
Coming in as the new ambassador 3 years ago, you must have come in with a to-do list. Are there some unfinished business on your to-do list?
No, there's always unfinished business. I would have loved to have gone to more places. I remember when I finally made it to Bishop Pride Taban's Peace Village. That was an exceptional experience to see people who had previously fought each other over cattle, living together peacefully in this one peace village that the bishop created himself. In terms of embassy functioning after the crisis, we are not back up to our full strength. I would love to see all of our people be able to be back, because I think that there's so much that we can do, and especially in this time of crisis, both including the humanitarian crisis as well as the actual fighting and conflict that's going on. We've increased our funding markedly, but yet we just don't have enough people to do all of the work that is required. So, yes, I mean, of course, there are definitely things that I am leaving for my successor to take care of. I have those regrets. But overall, I think I've done quite a lot, both for the embassy as well as for the best job I could for the people of South Sudan.
That's Susan Page, former U.S. ambassador to South Sudan. She spoke to me on Friday during her last interview with South Sudan in Focus. Ambassador Page will be advising the Office of the Special Envoy for Sudan and South Sudan here in Washington, D.C. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Human Rights Watch says Khartoum is still sending troops to Darfur. That story is coming up.
You don't want to miss VOA's South Sudan in Focus. You can hear us on one of our FM affiliate stations around the country or on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. In Juba, listen to South Sudan in Focus at 8 p.m. on 93.5. You can also find us on shortwave at 11995, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you think about using experimental drugs to fight fatal diseases before they are fully approved?
It's dangerous. Since the one making the drug, I'm not even sure if the drug is poisonous or it works on the person. So it may increase the disease or it may kill the person.
Look at the Ebola. The Ebola virus doesn't have medicine as of now. So if unapproved drugs are tried on patients, they might save lives.
I think it's best, like, if they use it, you know, as long as they're helping our community or the country, in a good term, so I think it's okay for it to be used.
As long as the drugs work, I don't mind using them. And as long as they're going to help me, even if they're not fully approved yet, if somebody used them and they helped them, then I'm also going to use them.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. An international human rights group wants the United Nations and the African Union peacekeeping mission in Darfur to do more to protect civilians and improve human rights monitoring. A senior researcher at Human Rights Watch, Jahan Henry, says Sudanese soldiers are still killing Darfur civilians, looting their property and blocking peacekeepers from reaching them. She tells VOA fellow Nabil Biagio the fighting between the government militia and rebel groups in Darfur means civilians will continue to suffer.
They're not able to get to the site where a lot of the conflict is happening. They're not able to effectively protect civilians. There are challenges with the protection of civilians, even in places where the mission is present.
According to your report, the joint African Union United Nations peacekeeping mission in Darfur has a team of about 60 human rights officers. Why do you say they're not doing enough to address human rights abuses in Darfur?
There is a large human rights team on the ground, but they no longer publish any of their research or information publicly. And one of the things the United Nations peacekeeping missions do is to have human rights reports come out as part of protection of civilians. The monitoring of cases is very important as a way of trying to influence the authorities and the perpetrators to address the abuses. So careful monitoring of cases and then also publicly reporting on patterns of human rights violations are both very important tools that peacekeeping missions have. The United Nations has also vowed to put human rights up front and to really emphasize, you know, to make sure that human rights is a key goal in all of its work across all of the agencies. So our statement was really an effort to remind the Security Council that, this very large mission in Darfur now, tasked to protect civilians and to protect the human rights of civilians on the ground, are really not doing enough. And one way of improving their function would be through closer monitoring and public reporting. Obviously, there are other ways to protect civilians too, which is through patrolling around areas where people are very vulnerable. And we recognize that the mission is doing that in many places where it can. But the Sudanese government has been very, very, obstructionist by preventing the mission from going out to many of the areas where there are conflicts. So we recognize that there's an incredible challenge there in access. But we're trying to emphasize that with the information that they do have and the presence that they do have, they could be doing much more, and this should include public reporting.
Your report further says UN officials working in Darfur sometimes look the other way. It says they don't report publicly and openly about human rights abuses by Sudanese government soldiers and government-backed militias.
The mission has not been reporting publicly on any of these developments. What it does is it has a couple of paragraphs in its periodic reports to the Secretary General. So every 3 months, the mission will issue a report to the Secretary General giving updates on a whole series of things. In those reports, it might have a few descriptions of, the recent conflict dynamics. It might talk about whether its people have seen a rise or drop in certain kinds of cases, but it's really not the kind of detail that would influence the government that could be, a useful advocacy tool and that lets the government know that the world is keeping track of what's going on. We really want to see these issues highlighted and emphasized and become more dominant because this conflict has gone on now for 11 years. And at the height of the conflict, of course, the world was very aware of what's going on in Darfur, but now there's almost no attention anymore.
What action are you asking the United Nations Security Council to take to address human rights violations in Darfur and also to address the cover-ups by UN officials working in Darfur?
With the cover-ups, the Secretary General has appointed an investigation. So there's not very much information out there on this investigation, but we hope very much that that investigation will take a hard look at all of those allegations that came out and also recommend ways for the mission to improve on its reporting.
That's Jehan Henry, a senior researcher at the Human Rights Watch, speaking to VOA fellow Nabil Biagio from New York. Listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. A Liberian doctor who was one of the three Africans to be treated with an unproven Ebola drug has died. Liberian officials today confirmed the death of Dr. Abraham Borbor, who was deputy chief medical doctor at the country's largest hospital. Borbor was one of three Liberia-based doctors to receive the experimental drug Zimap, where there was no update on the other two doctors. The two U.S. aid workers treated with the drug have survived, while a Spanish priest who received it died. Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko says the country's military spending will increase by $3 billion during the next few years because of the ongoing pro-Russia separatist threat in eastern Ukraine. Mr. Poroshenko made the comment in an Independence Day speech on Sunday, 23 years after the breakup of the Soviet Union. Meanwhile, pro-Russia separatists force-marched dozens of Ukrainian prisoners of war through the streets of rebel-held Donetsk in eastern Ukraine. And finally, fighting raged in Gaza again today, even as Egypt pressured Israel and the Palestinians to agree to a new ceasefire that could last at least a month. Israeli airstrikes killed eight more people in Gaza on the 49th day of the conflict in the Palestinian enclave along the Mediterranean. The Israeli army said Hamas militants fired 80 rockets across the border into Israel, but there was no casualties. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme. CJ Uman.
Junubia. That's the show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Junubia by CJ Uman. We have been listening to CJ Oman with that song Junubia. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Asaras Kailu.